I'm Brittany Harden-Tengue, a senior manager with KPMG, and I am fascinated by the practice of transfer pricing and its impact on the global market. Join me each episode as I explore the transfer pricing world with specialists who will explain the ins and outs of this niche practice where tax meets economics. Today, we're delving into the detailed dynamics between transfer pricing and tariffs and how these two very important aspects of tax interact with one another. I am very happy to have with me two wonderful guests, Nicole Porpilia, a managing director in the KPMG Trade and Customs Group based out of New York City. Welcome, Nicole.
Thanks for having me.
And then I also have a reoccurring guest, no stranger to exploring transfer pricing, a transfer pricing managing director based out of Dallas with KPMG, Adam Kelfer. Welcome, Adam.
Thank you, Brittany. It's an honor to be here again.
Well, we're always happy to have you back, and thanks for bringing along your pal, Nicole. Before we get deep into this, I want to ask you, Nicole, what are tariffs?
That is a great question. And I know there's a lot of confusion out there, just given how many folks are speaking about tariffs right now. Tariffs are simple. Every product that has been imported into the United States has a harmonized tariff code assigned to it.
Let me start with, what is a tariff code? A harmonized tariff code, which is also known as an HTS code, is a standardized numerical method of classifying a good that's imported into a particular region. The World Customs Organization has established a uniform, let's say, catalog of product codes that are assigned to each product category that is imported into respective jurisdictions. It's important to note that each jurisdiction around the world could still potentially adjust their interpretation of these harmonized codes. Now let's get into how duty is assessed, because this gets into the big question of who's paying for the duties. Duties are assessed based on these particular codes that are assigned to the product and the country of origin of the products, of where they're coming from, and then the country that they're destined for is the country applying the tariff rates. This varies by country. If there are particular different rules assigned to those particular countries, additional duty rates will apply, but there is always a standard rate. It could be a standard rate of zero that could apply, but the importer into the local jurisdictions would be responsible for those duties owed on those products.
It's sort of like a pay to play. If you're choosing to bring a good into a country, whether it's related party or unrelated, anybody who's bringing in a good will pay a tariff as it enters that country. There's essentially a rule book that determines what those amounts should be globally. But it's also worth recognizing that not all goods are subject to tariffs and that the rates can be varied depending on what they are.
Absolutely. There could be different rules based on where the goods are coming from. So what we call the harmonized tariff schedule, that's set and that's refreshed by the authorities periodically. In addition to that, the president and the government has the authority to take several governmental actions that could impact or increase tariffs like we're seeing right now. So there's the standard tariff, those always exist. Then there's these governmental actions that take place that could apply an additional tariff. Or if there's an additional tariff already assessed, they could use this authority to remove a tariff. It usually comes with an authority action in order to add or remove any tariffs.
For everybody that's listening, that's thinking, how does this impact my transfer pricing? If I think about a company that's importing, let's call it stereo equipment, and they're buying it from their related party outside the US at $50, pre any new tariff actions, they sell it at $60. They've been a good transfer pricing person. They set up their policy correctly. And so they're hitting a target margin. All of a sudden, a new tariff hits and their effective price becomes $55 because there's an additional $5 tariff. So their income statement shows a cost of goods sold of $55, but their revenue hasn't changed. Because they may be able to pass on the tariff, but probably not all of it, their transfer price is going to show a lower margin unless they can adjust the intercompany price downward.
So in this case, for simplicity, we're assuming that the base price on which the tariffs are applied is in fact the transfer price. And depending on how you are determining what is arm's length, you could be very dependent upon the profitability being at a certain level in order to realize a certain operating margin that you've targeted. All things being equal and assuming no change in the comparable companies, if you cut into that, then you could find yourself outside of a range if you didn't account for this increase in your costs.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So tariffs relate to the price on imported goods, which in the context of related parties is often the transfer price. Adam, would you tell me more about how these two concepts interplay?
If we take the example of stereo equipment, from a transfer pricing perspective, I'm going to look at what is the party manufacturing outside the U.S. selling to the U.S. distributor at, and I'm going to help my U.S. taxpayer, who's a distributor, figure out what do I need to buy at so that I can get to the correct margin. I know what my target margin is, so I know what they need to buy it at. And then Nicole's going to look at that and say, okay, let's say they have to buy it at $50 because they can sell at $60. Nicole's going to look at that and say, well, how do I get the value for dutiable purposes as low as possible within the confines of the law so that I can pay less overall duty where possible?
Let's talk about that, Nicole. If we have this rule book and then we have these additional layers, it seems pretty straightforward. How can one better appreciate what the appropriate tariff ought to be?
That's a great question. When you're thinking about your customs value, generally the most popular valuation method would be transaction value. And there are several other valuation methods that companies can use to bring in their goods. You then take a look at value and you say, well, what value is the most optimal value for me to use for customs purposes? You can't just say, oh, I want to use this value because it's lower. As Adam mentioned earlier, you have to make sure that whatever value you're using is compliant. So there's a couple methods we think about when we're trying to evaluate which value is appropriate. There is a valuation methodology and program that U.S. Customs permits. They allow you to go back to the original cost of the good for import purposes and what we call the first sale. It's essentially the value of the good plus a markup plus any statutory additions to the price. And essentially, companies, if they meet all the principles of this valuation method, they can go back all the way to that first sale and declare that to customs. So that could be the related party price between the factory and the overseas entity. And what that does is says the cost of the good was $20 and the marked up cost was $100. Now you're paying duty and tariffs on $20 instead of paying duties and tariffs on $100. Got a significant savings there. That's one way. Another way would be, let's assume the supply chain exists the way it does today, looking at the transfer price and the customs price together to ensure that you're meeting both TP and customs arm's length principles, which are in fact different and vary by country, and adjusting the transfer pricing to be optimal for import purposes while you're meeting those rules. That's what companies did during the first Trump administration. They looked at value, and if they didn't, this is something they're going to be looking at now because there's not a lot of ways around the additional tariffs.
Could you talk a little bit about the additions to value within the imported good, like the brand or the software, and that for my purposes as a transfer pricing person, I would say those are what make the product. But as I know from working with you, for customs purposes, there's actually things that are valuable. You can say, nope, that's not part of the dutiable value. I can extract that within the supply chain and not pay duty on that value because it's not part of the physical good.
There are several different types of charges that could be removed from the cost. It's important that when I say this, they all need to be evaluated to make sure that those actually meet the customs definitions of charges that could be removed. Things like international freight and insurance, certain post-exportation packing costs could be removed. Even local value-added tax, VAT charges that could be assessed in the local country. Customs doesn't think you should pay tax on top of tax. Buying commissions, rebates, even in some instances, how you treat software on certain types of products can potentially be itemized separately and paid separately because there's a different expectation for how tariffs are applied to those type of value add. There's a ton of fees and charges that could be potentially removed from the cost of the good. And if you can do this with the right proof, then customs says, okay, now your tariff rate is applied to that lower cost.
Brittany is somebody who's done a decent number of these projects now. I can honestly say it's one of those things, if Nicole were to do it with just her customs person, or if I were to do it with just my taxpayer, there's no way we would get to the right answer to really help our clients. But when we get Nicole and I in a room and talk through the details that each of us know, it's just like mixing a Ferrari with an extra supercharger. And all of a sudden it just makes it so much faster than you thought a car could even go.
And that's what I was realizing as you were speaking. Nicole is aware of this whole other world, and we could be listening to the same supply chain presentation, but we're going to be picking up on different nuances. And like you said, they interact, and there's an opportunity there to optimize tax payments, keeping all of these layers and details in mind. How often do you update a trade and customs study or interpretation of the import of a certain type of good?
You have to look at it annually or periodically as much as your business is evolving. This is something you do continuously. We want to make sure that the tariff classification is still accurate to what that product has evolved into. There's a very, very likely chance that the product may stay the same, but we're also really concerned, especially in the instance of related parties, that the transactions are still meeting the customs arm's length requirements. As Adam mentioned earlier, when you're thinking about it from a TP standpoint, though you can get transactional, you're thinking a little bit more at the aggregate scale. We're looking very much at the transactional and SKU level scale. We're getting into the weeds. From an aggregate scale, you might be okay, but from a transactional SKU level scale, as the product evolves and as it becomes more expensive, or as things change about the composition of the product, there may be a change to the profitability of those transactions from a customs perspective. And if it's not meeting the arm's length requirements for customs purposes and adjustments can't be made, then you have to think about alternative valuation methods to remain compliant with U.S. customs.
I'm also glad you brought up arm's length, because I think it would be irresponsible of any transfer pricing podcast host who had a trade and customs person on as yourself to not be explicit about the fact that we talk about arm's length and transfer pricing, but it is a different arm's length for you all.
Definitely different methodology and different authorities governing it. So different criteria. The methods for establishing customs arm's length, there's two main principles. You've got the test values for identical or similar goods exported at the same time or similar time to an unrelated buyer. Then there's the second method, which is the circumstances of stale. And this is showing that the relationship did not influence the price paid or payable. There are multiple tests within the circumstances of sales to help companies showcase those criteria. The most common one that I see is the all cost plus a profit test. There is a specific customs test that says you have to include all your costs plus you have to be making a profit. And doing this, you use the financials and transactional details of your entity's transaction and your SKU level transactions that you're importing. Then you've got the normal pricing practices of the industry and then settling prices similar as with unrelated buyers. Most commonly, we leverage the all cost plus a profit test to show that you're meeting customs arm's length requirements around arm's length pricings from a customs perspective. But when all is said and done, we get into the transactional details showcasing customs arm's length rather than maybe some of the details you guys might get into from a TP perspective.
That's great. Thank you. Can we talk a little bit about the interaction between tariffs and transfer pricing adjustments and how you all have seen that successfully be navigated?
One of the best practices I've seen is I worked with a very large taxpayer that had a very big issue between customs and transfer pricing, and they tried to create a harmonized pricing policy at the beginning of the year so that the pricing policy was set up to meet both customs and transfer pricing, but they had very specific parameters to monitor it throughout the year and adjust it so that way they're not coming in at the end of the year and either making big payments to customs or asking for big refunds that may never get paid because some customs authorities don't like to pay refunds even if you're owed them. Nicole, have you seen other things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. The end of the term in which you have realized you need to make an adjustment, depending on how the adjustment impacts the cost of the goods, would essentially tell us if these adjustments were in scope for customs purposes. So as soon as it's determined that these transfer price adjustments are in scope for customs purposes, we would then think about, is this in a customs implication where the cost of the good goes up and you owe customs additional tariffs? Or is this a transfer price adjustment that relates to the cost of the goods where the price goes down and you expect a refund from customs? These adjustments require a declaration of these adjustments to U.S. Customs. A lot of folks, a transfer price adjustment will happen. They won't realize that there's a customs implication and they'll never adjust their price. And then down the line, if they get audited on something maybe completely different, and then customs finds out you actually owed us another $1 million, they're going to come back to you for loss of revenue and potentially penalties.
I thought of actually a really good real world example. Let's say the U.S. is making the stereos. They're selling it to 30 different countries around the world who are the distributors. And so with this taxpayer, what we did is we initially said, you're going to sell the stereos at $50 a piece. And at the end of the year, we need to figure out what is your true-up mechanism. And we have two options. We can either increase the transfer price upwards if the distributor is making too much money, or we could decrease the transfer price. However, we can't decrease it below the value of the production cost because then you run into anti-dumping and countervailing duties. But an alternative was, if they're making too much money, we could also charge a royalty instead of increasing the transfer price because those stereos are subject to customs duties. And initially, what I was focused on when I was talking to our international tax folks was, okay, in each of these countries, what's the withholding tax on royalties? What I didn't realize, though, until I talked to somebody like Nicole from Customs is, oh, wait a second, depending on what that royalty is for, that could be considered an addition of value, which is still dutiable. And so not only might I get hit with a withholding tax and a royalty, I might still be paying the customs duties on that value. And so not only have I not saved my client money by charging a royalty, they've actually paid more money by charging a royalty than just
Another example of where I've seen that cross happen is when a company's trade team was leveraging free trade agreements with different countries, and they were relying upon a certain cost plus percentage to show their U.S. contributions were meeting the regional value contributions for the trade agreement for those particular countries. And what happened was, because the tax team and the customs team were not working closely together, when the tax team lowered the transfer price, they no longer had the value contribution in the U.S. that they needed to satisfy the free trade agreement's requirements, and they lost millions of dollars in free trade agreement savings because they no longer were qualifying for those free trade agreements. Just another example of how working together can either help you save, but also have a consequence if not done.
That's a real cost to lack of communication and coordination, but we recognize it's hard. It's part of just building in those habits of having those check-ins. Especially if you're dealing with trade and customs, you need to stay close to what those potential duties are.
Absolutely.
Any last thoughts?
The starting point is having the customs and the transfer pricing folks talk periodically, because it's really amazing how much value you can create or unlock just by having those two things come together.
I think companies may have traditionally operated in a certain way over the years, and it might not have had as severe customs implications because maybe their product wasn't subject to duties or wasn't on the radar for U.S. customs. Now, with this focus on this tariff climate that we're in right now, where the tariffs are evolving daily, getting value right and getting value optimal and making sure that all of those non-dutiable costs and all of those different opportunities to look at value, I think now we're front and center to conduct this exercise together to ensure that you're minimizing the exposure to the company. Maybe some industries weren't impacted before, so fair enough, you were compliant, but maybe not optimizing it. Now it's gone beyond compliance and into an area of strategy to help your company save.
Well, I appreciate you all so much. As a customary thank you for the wonderful duty that you have done here in educating and making it fun. So thanks again, y'all. I'm really glad that you shared this with us, and that, again, like you said, there's nothing but opportunity here.
Yeah, thank you, Brittany. It's a pleasure.
Thank you so much. This was wonderful.
Thanks for joining me on this adventure in transfer pricing. See you next time.